We're holding on page Lamed in Chagiga, the fourth line, middle of Ois Tes. Page number is Lamed in Chagiga. I just said page Lamed. Lamed. Can someone show him?
58?
Yeah, it's opposite page 58. All right, well, we started learning yesterday about, we said that the Mishnah had said that you have to be very careful whom to whom you teach, and then the Gemara had added you have to be very careful to whom you teach Maaseh Merkava. You can't teach to two people, even two people at a time. It has to be individually, and only if he's a Chacham or Maven Midaitai. He's smart enough to understand if you give him the basics that he can deduce the rest himself, and the Gemara had mentioned various other criteria. So we left off that Rabbi Yosef had a discussion about this with Sovei de Pumpadisa, the elder Tamar Chacham of Pumpadisa, whom elsewhere the Gemara identifies as Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Ein. So they were familiar with the ins and outs of Maaseh Bereishis. He was familiar with the ins and outs of Maaseh Merkava. So they had made a deal that they'll teach each other. So then he had them teach him Maaseh Bereishis. And then when it comes to him teaching them Maaseh Merkava, he says that it's supposed to, these things are supposed to be kept hidden. In other words, he didn't think that they were of the caliber to be able to learn. Obviously, by the way, you know, we mentioned in the Mishnah that you have Maaseh Bereishis first and then Maaseh Merkava. It doesn't mean when Rabbi Yosef is asking them to teach him Maaseh Bereishis that he was completely unfamiliar with it. How would he have reached Maaseh Merkava without Maaseh Bereishis? Means he knew the basics, but he wanted them to teach him the deeper details of it, and vice versa with him to teach them Maaseh Merkava. So Omrulay, so they said to him, you know, you're telling us that these things are supposed to be kept secret, but actually Tanenin Bahu ad Vayomer Eli Ben Adam. Actually, we have already learned the basics, the Rosh Prakim of Maaseh Merkava, as far as the beginning of Perek Beis of Yechezkel. Now the Maaseh Merkava that Yechezkel describes is primarily in Perek Aleph. Omulahem, so he says, oh, in that case, hein, Maaseh Merkava, in that case, then if you've gotten that far, then you've already learned the central part of Maaseh Merkava, because it actually explains that what you have is near the end of that perek, and you can see, there, you can look in a siddur, perek aleph of Yechezkel, we read it as that third of the first day Shavuos, so the last couple of psukim over there are that Yechezkel sees the vision after he sees the chayas and the ephanim and all of that. Then he sees the throne of Hashem. Then, so to speak, he sees the Odom Shalakise. He says he sees a figure of a man sitting on the throne, and there's a certain appearance above his waist and below his waist. And he describes it's like seeing a rainbow in the clouds. That was like the glory of Hashem that I saw. So those two psukim, those are the core of Maaseh Merkava, in the sense that's really what the Chachamim are mainly concerned about when they're saying you have to be careful to whom you teach Maaseh Merkava and how many people and so forth, because they might easily misunderstand that to mean that Hashem actually has the form of a person, or even to think, for example, that there's a difference between above and below within Hashem himself, which can lead to believing in two gods, or Chachman al-Tzlan, as we're going to have later on with Elisha ben Avuya. So now he's telling them, but you already got through the whole Perek Aleph, which means you got through those two psukim. By the way, Rashi brings on that first pasuk of those two when it says that he saw the Dmus Shalakise. Rashi says you're not allowed to think into the meaning of that pasuk. You read the pasuk, fine, we read it as the Haftarah, but don't start delving into and thinking what it really means, because then you're going to come to problems with Amun. Anyway, so Rabbi Yosef is telling them, if you've already reached the end of Perek Aleph, and then you've already gotten through the psukim that are the central part of Maaseh Merkava, and in that case, then there's nothing really to worry about. So Maharsha Shah says, so up until now, they meant they knew the Rosh Prakim. They want to learn the whole thing from him. So he's saying, you know what? You guys are wise enough that having learned the Rosh Prakim, including the entire Perek Aleph and including those two difficult psukim, then you really don't need anything more from me. You don't need me to teach you anything beyond the Rosh Prakim. You are Chachamim and Maven Midaitam, and you'll understand the rest yourselves. So the Gemara says, Nesvi, though, I have a contradiction. So you're telling me then that Maaseh Merkava goes all the way until up to and including those last two psukim. But a braisa says at Heichan Maaseh Merkava, up to what point in those psukim in Yechezkel is Maaseh Merkava, the part that has the rules that we've been saying all this time about how many people and what kind of people you're allowed to teach it to. Rebbe Omer ad Vo'era, in Chashmal Basra. Revi says until the last time it says Va'era. Va'era, rather. Now, there's three times in that parrot where Yechezkel says Va'era, and I saw. First, he sees a few psukim into the parak. He sees va'era v'hine ruach sa'ara ba'am and atzaf, and he sees a storm wind. The Gemara is going to explain soon what the significance of that. And then he sees him with toven, and then he starts seeing the efan. Then he starts seeing the chayas. Then a few psukim later, he has another va'era where he starts seeing the efan. Whereas he describes over there, you have the efan, a wheel like malachim that accompany the chayas hakodesh wherever they go. And then you have the third va'era. Is where he sees the Odom Shalakise. So Rebbe is saying up till the last Va'era, the words Ke'en Chashmal does mention in that pasuk, which is why Ein Yaakov has it, but in the printed Gemaras you don't have that. Anyway, the last Va'era, so meaning in other words up till there, V'loy Ad B'chlal. So Ma'aseh Merkava, according to Rebbe, ends at those words. Not like Rabbi Yosef is saying that it includes those two psukim. Rabbi Yitzchok says that until you have, in that pasuk, you have the way he says, what the Yechezkel says, Va'era Ke'en Chashmal, on the second of those two psukim, the next to last pasuk of the Perek, Yechezkel says that I saw above his waist, so to speak, and below his waist, and I saw in one of those places, I saw Ke'en Chashmal, which the Gemara is going to talk about soon, what Chashmal is. In modern Hebrew, it means electricity, but that's not what it means in the Pasuk. Anyway, so Rabbi Yitzchok says that you can go a little bit further, that Maisa Merkava goes a little bit further than Rebbe says. Rebbe is saying until the last time it says Va'era, where he starts describing the vision of the Odom Shalakisei, and Rebbe Yitzchok said you can go a little bit further until you get to the word Chashmal, and that passage is part of Maisa Merkava. So the point is, though, Rabbi Yosef is saying that those entire psukim are part of Ma'aseh Merkava. He's saying only when you reach the end of Perek Aleph have you finished with Ma'aseh Merkava. So what is it? The answer is, Ad Va'era Magmirin. Until that last Va'era, until you get to that point of the Odom Shalakiseh, you can teach it like you would teach anything else. You're not like anything else, but you can teach the entire thing. You can teach the entire description and the details of what all about the Chayas HaKodesh and the Ifanim and all that. Mikan ve'elach. But from then on, once you get to the description of the Odom Shalakise, Masrinin Roshe Prakim. From there on, after Vo'era, according to Rebbe, or according to after Chashmal, according to Rebbe Yitzchak, where there you're talking about the vision, so to speak, of Hashem himself on the throne, Masrin and Roshei Prakim, the most we can give over that is Roshei Prakim, which is that would be what the Mishnah says, that you can only give over Roshei Prakim, or what we've learned in the Gemara yesterday, that you can only teach Roshei Prakim, you can only teach the basic, the chapter headings, and from there on the Talmud has to figure it out on his own. Ikadamri, another version, is Ad Va'era Masrin and Roshei Prakim. No, actually, according to the second version, up till Va'era, you can teach only Roshei Prakim, not the entire thing. Mikan Va'elach, after that, you can't even teach Roshei Prakim of those last couple of psukim. Im hu chacham mev midai te'en. If he's a chacham and he's going to be able to understand the psukim on his own, then fine, he can learn them. Eloi loy, and if not, then not. So according to that second version, so in other words, both versions, both understandings of the Braisa, and both Rebbe and Rebbe Yitzchak agree that the two psukim that Rebbe Yosef was referring to, the ones that refer to the Odom Shalakiseh, are definitely part of Ma'aseh Merkava. When Rebbe and Rebbe Yitzchak are saying up till what point, they mean up till what point can you teach more broadly, and what part can you teach less or not even at all. Rabbi Yosef was telling Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Eina, you guys have already gotten past that point. You've already learned those psukim. So then in that case, I really have nothing more that I can add to you. The Rambam actually has a different understanding in Moreh Nevuchim of this piece of Gemara and the Braisa and what the Gemara means by it. He says that actually the argument is really not the last Va'era where he describes the Odom Shalakise, but rather the earlier Va'eras where he sees the Chayas and where he sees the Efanim. The question is, are you allowed to teach those less restrictively, and you have the different opinions over here and the different understandings in the Gemara, whether you can do that or whether even those things, even to teach about the Chayas and the Ifanim, is maybe something restricted, and you can teach only Roshei Prakim, and you can teach it to only a certain caliber of person. Because after all, I mean, even those psukim are talking about the malachim, but there's still things that a person might misunderstand from them about the nature of malachim, about certain aspects of it. Of course, that might cause a person problems with his amunah if he doesn't know what he's doing. Okay. Well, the point is, we did mention this pasuk chashmal, and now there's actually twice in those psukim where Yechezkel refers to that concept. A few psukim in, right at the beginning of his nevuah, he says that, he says, I saw a ruach sa'ora bomb in Atzofa, and a storm wind coming from the north with various things, and then he says that, and then he says over there, and we toicha, within that, he sees over there a cloud, on and God over Ishmael Sakatas, the Noiga Loisavid, which is where we get the concept, the name Klipas Noiga comes based on that passage. Anyway, we toicha, and within it, he says, Ke'ena Chashmal, mitoicha Ish, is a semblance of Chashmal from within the fire. So now the Gemara is going to discuss a little bit what Chashmal is. Then you have, further on, many of them are Foshim on the Pasuk say that Chashmal is a name for a particular color or a particular type of fire, a particular glow of fire or something. The Gemara is going to give a different angle on it. Anyway, then you have further on, after we describe the Chayas and the Rakia above their heads that we talked about before, then he says, when he saw the Dmus Kiseh, when he saw the vision of Hashem's throne, he saw the Dmus Kamare Adam, the vision of a human figure sitting on it, so he says, Va'era Ke'in Chashmal, I saw a semblance of Chashmal, on the lower half of that figure. So twice in those Pesukim, it mentions Chashmal. Now, the implication is that, based on what we said so far, that you could douse in to a certain extent on what Chashmal is, because we said Rabbi Yitzchak in particular is saying up till you get to Chashmal, you can teach you can teach the whole thing, and after that only Rosh Hashanah, especially if we understand that we're talking about the Va'era Basra, the last Va'era in Pasuk Chavov over there, where you see or Chav Zayim rather, where he sees the Chashmal surrounding Hashem. Surrounding Hashem, surrounding the vision of Hashem, so to speak, that he sees, but you have Chashmal much earlier in the Pesukim, already in Pasuk Dalet. So the implication is that you can douse in on Chashmal. Can you in fact do that? There was once a boy who was douseing about what Chashmal is, and a fire came out from Chashmal and burnt him up. So we see that it is so we see on the face of it that it's dangerous to be doushing in that. The answer is shiny yinuka, d'le matazim. It's different with a boy. He's not really of the age yet to be learning these kinds of things. D'lav erach out of the darish, and it's not really the derech eretz dikta Hashem that such a young boy should be doushing in these kinds of things. But, when a person is older, so then he can learn about it and he can get some idea of what Chashmal is. As the Gemara is now going to go on to discuss what it is. When they came up, by the way, when they came up with the word chashmal to mean electricity in modern Hebrew, there were some people who argued we shouldn't use the word. It's taking a concept from Kedusha and degrading it. There were even some rabbanim who refused to use the word at all, but it generally became accepted by most Rum Yidden and even most rabbanim that it's fine to use. It's one of those things. Okay, it means something, a tremendous thing in Kedusha, but nevertheless, it also has come to have another meaning. One thing is brought someplace in Eitz Chaim, I think, or some one of Reb Chaim Vital's Sfarim, that Chashmal is the gematria of the word Malbush. So he says that it has to do kind of with we're talking about here about the first time that he sees Chashmal over there is within the Klippers, and particularly within Klippas Noga. So then Chashmal is like a Malbush. It's one of those garments that hides a lakus from us, and therefore that's what it is. So we're saying this boy was dowshitting in that. He shouldn't have been doing that at such a young age, but for an older person, we're saying it's fine. So the Gemara tells, Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav, Bram Zohar Oysa Ish Latoiv. In truth, the word Bram literally means however, but sometimes the Gemara uses that word or Avol in Lashon Kodesh. Sometimes in Lashon Kodesh, Avol means indeed or truly, like you find by Yosef's brothers, Avol Hashem Emanachnu, and the word Bram, which is the Aramaic equivalent, also sometimes means truly or indeed. So indeed, this person should be remembered for good. But Hananiah ben Chizkiah Shmoy, named Hananiah ben Chizkiah, she omolin hu nigna sefer Yechezkel. If it hadn't been for him and his efforts, as the Gemara is going to tell now, sefer Yechezkel would have been hidden away, and the Chachamim would have said nobody is allowed to learn. because seemingly there were things in Yechezkel that contradicted the Torah. Now here, the Gemara is first bringing this point, then the Gemara is going to bring that, there were two objections the Chachamim had to Yechezkel. One was that seemingly there were psukim in it that contradict psukim in Chumash, and that could weaken people's amunah. And the other one was going to be the story that we just mentioned about a boy who was darshaning about Chashmal, and then he was burnt by a fire that came from it. So in what way does Yechezkel seem to contradict the Torah? So Rashi mentions, you have at the end of Sefer Yechezkel, when he describes the third Beis Mikdash, Shibonim Meher Yemenu, he describes all kinds of korbanos that have no parallel anywhere in the Torah. There are different numbers, different amounts, different numbers of korbanos, different amounts of flour and whatnot that go with them, different scheduling, all kinds of things. So it seems it contradicts what it says in Chumash about the korbanos. So the Chachamim were concerned that's going to weaken people's amunah in the Torah. So in fact, there's an interesting tshuva from Rav Moshe on the subject. In his time, back about 50 years ago, they published the commentary of Rav Yehuda HaChosid on Chumash, and there were passages in it that seemed to be very strange, almost apocryphal. Things where, for example, he says that there were certain things in Chumash that were added in later generations after Moshe Rabbeinu. So they brought this to the attention of Rav Moshe, and he says it's pretty obvious that those things were added, whereas forgeries, Rav Yehuda HaChosid could not possibly have written such things. Anyway, he says, al derech, like when he discusses in that connection, this Gemara over here, you see that the Chachamim were ready to take a Sefer of Nevi'im, even though by definition a Sefer of Nevi'im is written for us to learn from it. It's meant to be a Nevuah Shehutzah Koladernis, like we learned in Megillah. It's something that's needed for future generations, but the Chachamim were ready to withdraw it from circulation, because otherwise it could weaken people's Amunah and Torah Shebuch Zahav. And only because, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, Hanani ben Chizkiah saved the situation, did they keep it.
So the explanation
we're going to explain in a minute. So what happened? Ma'osa, what did Hananya do? Olal Aliyah, he went up to the second floor of his house so he could have some privacy. The Heloloshom Gimel Meis Gaib Shemen, they brought him up 300 barrels of oil. 300 is often a guzma, but it means they brought him up a huge amount of oil so he could keep his lamp lit and be able to continue working on this nonstop. The Yoshab Aliyah, he sat in that second floor of a Doshan and he darshan those psukim. So, for example, as far as the Korbanos, the Gemara mentions in Menachos some of his resolutions there. Some of those unusual Korbanos that Yechezkel describes are Korbanos Miluyim, and we always find Korbanos Miluyim by the Mishkan and by the first Beis Mikdash and by the second Beis Mikdash. A lot of times those are unusual. They always have unusual features that you don't have another Korbanos, and nothing wrong with that. As far as the rest of them, he doubts them in various ways. For example, you have a Pasuk there that says that on Shabbos, you should bring 6 sheep as a korban olah. Now, what do you mean on Shabbos? The Torah tells us to bring only 2. So he explains, Shabbos over there means Yom Tov, as we find like Mimochas a Shabbos. And the 6, it's teaching us halacha on most Yom Tovim, you're supposed to bring 7 sheep as a korban. We just have this in Rambam, Shlosha Prakim. What happens if you don't have 7, you only have 6? Or do we say that you can't bring them because it's 7 or nothing? No, the Pasuk is teaching us, if all you have 6, bring 6. And the same way he douches in all these other things. Marsha points out that elsewhere the Gemara actually explains another thing as well, that there were other things in Sefer Yechezkel that seemed to contradict the Torah. For example, there's a pasuk in Yechezkel that says the Kohenim are not allowed to eat Nevelo Treifa. What do you mean? Does that imply Yisraelim are allowed to? Nobody even knows Yid is allowed to eat Nevelo Treifa. So again, Hananya came to the rescue and explained what it means is like this. We know that when it comes to brood korbanos, we don't shat them. We do malika, the kohen kills them by cutting through the neck with his fingernail. Normally that would make the brood nevela. Here the Torah is saying by chatas ha'oif that not only that's the right thing to do, but afterward the kohenim eat it like any other chatas. So you would think once the kohenim are allowed to eat that, maybe they're allowed to eat other nevela as well. And therefore Yechezkel comes and stresses that no, it's not so. So those kinds of things he worked on all that time in that attic over there, and worked on reconciling, on explaining what Yechezkel actually means, so that to show that it doesn't contradict the Torah, and therefore the Chachamim don't have to withdraw safely Yechezkel from circulation. Anyway, continues the Gemara, Tanan Abanan, and then we learn in a Braisa, there was a similar problem later on that the Chachamim had had a problem with Sefer Yechezkel. Like we said before, Maisa v'chinik echad sheikorim v'beis rabbi v'sefer Yechezkel. It happened that a boy was learning in his Rebbe's house, in his cheder. He was learning Sefer Yechezkel. And he was contemplating what exactly Chashmal is, the doubtion about it. Yotze Eish Mechashmal, Srafatu, and a fire came from Hashmal and burnt him. Bikshu Chachamim Lignus Sefer Yechezkel. So Chacham was saying this is a dangerous thing to have around. We have to hide away Sefer Yechezkel. So again, Omer Lahem, Yeshua ben Gamliel, Hanani ben Chizkiah. So again, one of the Chachamim, whichever one you have the gears over here, said, don't worry about it. Im Zeh Chacham, fine, this particular boy is extra wise, and he's able to figure this kind of thing out, and then getting too far to the point where he's getting harmed by it. Kulam Chachamim, hey, do you think everybody else is a Chacham like that? Sefer Yechezkel can remain in circulation by all means. Most people can learn it, and they aren't going to have the slightest concept of what Chashmal is, even based on what we're going to describe now in the Gemara, to the extent where they should be in any kind of danger. Okay. My Chashmal, so what actually is Chashmal? Om Rav Yehuda, it stands for Chayos Eish Memalos. Chayos of fire that are speaking. Rashi explains, when they speak, then fire comes out of a fire comes out from their words as they speak. So, Masnisa Tana and a Braisa, we learn there's another point behind the word Chashmal, itim choshes itim memalolos. It means that these are malachim who sometimes are quiet and sometimes they speak praises to Hashem. The Shoshad Dibu Yotzim of HaKadosh Baruch Hu choshes. When Hashem is speaking, then they're quiet. Yechezkel himself, in fact, describes in that vision just that. He says, when there was a voice from the Rakia Asher HaRosham, then their wings droop and they're quiet. So that's the choshes. And it was Shoshaina Dibu Yotzim of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When Hashem is not speaking, Memalolos, then they speak and they praise Hashem. So that's another meaning of Chashmal. It comes from the word Chosh and Mal. Chosh and Mal and Molal, meaning to be quiet and to speak. The Rambam actually has another take on it. Again, in Mori Nevuchim, he spends a lot of time discussing this whole matter of Maisa Bereishis and Maisa Merkava and all that. And he explains another point is the word chosh means to run back and forth, and the word mal means, he says, means stand still. So it means like they're rushing and they're standing still, almost like at the same time. It's a paradox. But that's why we're saying it's so difficult to understand. This one boy, we're saying, was able to understand it so deeply that eventually he got consumed by a fire from it. But there will be a Yeshua ben Gamliel, Hanani ben Chizkiah, saying, don't think anybody else is really on the same caliber to understand that kind of concept. Okay. So now we're going to douse in some of the psukim that Yechezkel says in connection over there about the Chayas HaKodesh. You have, by the way, most of the description is in Perek Aleph of Yechezkel, and again, we read it as the Haftarah to the first day Shavuos. By the way, in keeping with what we said in the Mishnah, that only a Chacham or maybe Midaitoi is supposed to learn that, that is why we have the Minhag that the Shul Rav or somebody Choshev like that is the one given that Haftarah. We don't just give it to a boy or we don't just give it to Stam a person. Then you have later on in Perek Yud, Yechezkel repeats a lot of the description with variations. And later on, the Gemara is going to bring a few of those psukim and explain the reason for the variation. Those two things in Perek Aleph and Perek Yud are basically the whole description of Maisa Merkava that you have there. You have a couple of scattered psukim here and there where he describes bits and pieces, but other than that, those are the two major ones. Anyway, so the pasuk says, "V'achayas rotzei v'shoy." The Chayas are running back and forth. They're running back and forth. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Ka'ur ha-yotz mipi ha-kivshon. It's like the way when you have flames that come out from a kiln where you're burning, Rashi describes, where you're burning limestone to make lime for plaster. And you have flashes of fire that come out of it every so often. So that's like they're flashing back and forth. Tosfos brings from Rabbeinu Hananel that these malachim are, that's exactly what you have. When you have, for example, coals every so often, like a fire will flare up from them, that's what it is. Not that they're actually moving, in other words, necessarily, but you constantly see flares of fire coming out. My kemare habozok. Now he continues, the rotze v'shoy, they run back and forth, kemare habozok, like the appearance of bozok. So what is bozok? It means the flashes of fire and the colors of fire that you see that come out from between the shards of earthenware. The word bozok means broken pieces of earthenware. Rashi points out the basic meaning of bozok is things that are small, things that are broken up. What it means is, Rashi describes like this. When you're refining gold, so you have You put the gold on coals. Then on top of that, you put broken pieces of earthenware to help beat the heat, because you need quite a lot of heat in order to smelt gold. And then you have on top of it, you have like a hood or a lid also made out of a piece of earthenware that has a lot of holes. So now you have, as you're refining the gold, then a lot of the flashes of fire and different colors of fire come leaping out through the holes over there, and that's what we're describing over here as Kamari HaBazak, that the Malachim, you see like such flashes of fire from them. Okay, he continues, so we're saying that those are different types of malachim, yeah. So we're saying that, he's saying that we see the Chayas HaKodesh, we see like there's flames coming out of them all the time. And Rotze V'Shoiv, by the way, this is, you know, we have the expression all over the Siddurs, Rotze V'Shoiv, that we have this dynamic of running towards other course and then returning, realizing that the Eidusha wants us to be where we are. The Chayas HaKodesh go through the same kind of back and forth. Rotze, they want to run and be completely absorbed into other course, and then Shoiv, and then they return and realize that they have their place and they can't go any further. Next, Yechezkel continues, earlier, he begins his description by saying, behold, there was a storm wind coming from the north. So the Heichan Ozal, where is it going? Or Rashi has a different gear, so my boy Yehosan, why is it going, why punk is it coming from the north? So the answer is going to be based on the fact that Babel is north of Eretz Yisrael. If you look on a map, it's northwest. So in the Gemara, usually Babel is depicted as east of Eretz Yisrael, which is why in Eretz Yisrael, in Gemara terminology, is usually called Marav, or the west. But in Tanakh, it's usually described as being north. But it is, it's both north and east. Anyway, so Amar of Yehuda Amarav, Shaholach Lichvash, is called Olam, with name of Nebuchadnezzar Rosh. The Eidishter is going to overcome, to conquer the whole world in the presence of Nebuchadnezzar HaRosh, who was the king of Babel. So this Ruach Sa'ara, Barminat Sofen, now you have, you know, now in Tanya, the Alphabet brings that the Ruach Sa'ara and Onan Godo and Eishin Spakathas, etc., represent the Sholosh Klippas that made. So we're saying that now Hashem is giving those Klippas power such that they will be able to conquer the Jewish people. So that the nations don't say the Yad Umashvala Masar HaKadosh Baruch Hu the Esbon. So the Goyim shouldn't say that Hashem gave over his children into the hands of a lowly nation. In other words, so therefore Hashem wants to make that Nebuchadnezzar and his people are as important as possible in order for that. In fact, Maharshal says, like this you have, so can describe that the Kaskim, Nebuchadnezzar's nation, were originally a very lowly nation. Zeh Eretz Kaskim, Hein Eretz Kaskim, Zeh Ha'om Boi Hoya. They weren't even a nation until now. But now Hashem made them greater. We have the famous expression, Kol HaMetzel Yisrael Na'aseh Rosh, whoever causes trouble to the Jewish people, becomes a leader, and one of the reasons for that is, as the Gemara is saying over here, so that the Goyim don't think that, look at that, Hashem gave over his nation and then had them subjugated by a lowly nation, so therefore Hashem has to make Nebuchadnezzar the leader of a superpower. So that's what we're saying, that this Ruach Sa'ara is coming Minat Sofen in order to accomplish that. And in fact, Omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so Hashem says in that connection, Ni Goram Li She'eya Shamash Lo'ev Dikachovim. Look at that. Hashem says, what causes that I have to be, so to speak, subjugated to the Goyim? And this is the concept of Shechinta Begolusa, Avinisayim Shoy Yisrael, Hein Goram Li, if the Jewish people's Aveiras that caused it, and that's why now I have, I have no choice, so to speak, but to make the Onan Gadol and Ruach Sa'ara and so forth are going to be subjugating the whole world to Nebuchadnezzar. And that means, in other words, I'm going to have to be Mashpia to those Goyim, to those wicked Goyim, only because the Jewish people kind of forced that to happen, which is what it means. Altogether explained in detail in various places in Tanya, the idea that we do Averis, and that brings down, so that brings Chayus into the Klippos, and that causes eventually, we're talking about over here, so you have Golos on an individual level, and eventually it causes Golos on a national level, as we're saying over here. Marshall points out, actually, you have, after Yechezkel sees that whole vision of the Merkava, at the beginning of Perek Beis, Hashem starts speaking to him, and Hashem says, listen, I'm sending you El Bnei Yisrael, to the Jewish people, El Goyim HaMordim, to the rebellious nations. Now, Mefarshim on the Pasuk explained that Goyim HaMordim means the Jewish people themselves. Sometimes the Jewish people can be called Goyim, like Hashem tells Yaakov, Goyim Yemimecha. But here, Marsha is saying that, no, what it means is, I'm sending you to Bnei Yisrael, and because of how Bnei Yisrael are acting, therefore, it winds up that Goyim Amodim, the Goyim who rebel against me and don't believe in me, wind up gaining power because of the Jewish people's others. Next, going back to Yechezkel's description of the Chayus, so he says, Bo'era HaChayus, the second time he says Bo'era, again, the first time was, he saw the Ruach Sa'ara, etc. Then he sees the Chayus, and then next to the Chayus, he sees the Ifan. So he says, Va'era Achayas, I observed the Chayas, Vihine Oifanecha Ba'aret Eitzah Achayas, and behold, I saw a wheel on the ground, meaning on the surface that they're standing on next to the Chayas. So in the simple sense, it means that he saw, as he goes on to describe over there, how each Chaya has its own Oifan, and as the Chaya moves, the Oifan moves with it, etc., etc. But Omer of Elazar, Malach Echad Shu Oymed Ba'aretz. When it says Ba'aretz, it doesn't just mean the surface that he sees up above the seven Rekiyim that the Chayas are standing on. It means literally on the ground. There's a certain Malach who stands on the ground, V'roshe Magia Levein HaChayas, and his head reaches up all the way to among the Chayas. So in other words, he's a lower level Malach, but he reaches up to be in some sense on the same level as that. The Masnisa Tana, and a Braisa we learn, Sandol Shema. So you have the full name is printed over here in the Gemara, but as we know, the Arizal says that in general we shouldn't say names of Malachim, because we don't want to summon them, basically, unless they're also used as names of people, like Gabriel or Michal or what have you, so therefore we don't say the name in full. Anyway, that's his name. The Gavoya Mechabera Mahalachemei Eshana. He's taller than all the other Malachim of his caliber by 500 years' journey, as we learned before, that's the distance from Earth to the first Rakia, and between each Rakia and the next, and so forth. But Oymed Achoyre HaMerkava, he stands behind the Merkava, so we're saying over here, like he's next to the highest, like he's on a lower level than them, but Koshek Sodom Lekonoi, and he ties and weaves crowns for Hashem who created it. What does he make those crowns out of? Tosfa says he takes the tefillos of the tzaddikim. Marsha adds that's why he stands on earth, because there he hears the tefillos of the tzaddikim and the songs of the tzaddikim, and he weaves them together into crowns for Hashem. There's medrashim that say specifically what he makes them out of is specifically the omens and the yeheshmei rabbas and the bohus and the kedushas that we say those all become the crown that the smalach sandal makes for Hashem. In Chassidus, by the way, it talks about in a number of places the idea that we have between each olam, between one olam and the next, between Atzilus and Bria, and between Bria and Yitzira, and so forth. There's a prosa, there's like a curtain that screens off. Yeah, but Atzilus is far too high for Bria, is far higher than Bria and Bria than Yitzira, and so forth. And therefore, there has to be a tzimtzum rav va'otzim, and there has to be a prosa, there has to be a partition between one and the next. So it talks about in various places, in various maimorim, that the same way as you wear shoes, you wear a sandal, you wear sandals or shoes on your feet as a partition between you and the bare ground, the same way this Malach sandal over here serves the same function. He is, or he embodies, or whatever, the prosa that is between one world and the next. So we're saying that his head reaches up into the next one, in the sense that you always have, like we were talking about before, that keser of one level descends from Malchus of the previous level, of the level above it, and therefore in that sense you can say that he reaches up into there, and then from there he descends down into the next world. So his function is that he weaves these crowns for Hashem. So when I ask Amy, is that so? So you're telling me it's possible to put a crown on Hashem's head? Well, see, Baruch Vod Hashem in Mekoyimah, the Malachim themselves say, Yechezkel sees later on, and he says, they say, blessed is the glory of Hashem from his place, implying they don't know where Hashem's place is. And even this Malach Sandal doesn't know. So how is he supposed to put a crown, so to speak, on Hashem's head? So implying they don't know where Hashem's place is, such that they should be able to put a crown on him. Okay, Marsha points out, of course, Hashem is not bounded by space anyway, and or more to the point, actually, Chazal tell us when we call Hashem, Hamokon, because Hashem is the place of the world is within all, of course, Hashem is not within the world. But fine, when we say, though, that after all, there are certain places where there's more of a Gilui Shechina, and the Malachim don't even know that. So how would this Malach Sandal be able to take the crown that he made for Hashem and be able to put it, so to speak, on Hashem's head? So Elab to Kosher Leila Kesser. So rather, what he does is he ties the crown, he weaves the crown together, Umashviyah Hashem HaMeforash, and then he beswears it with Hashem's name, V'ozol Taga V'yosib B'duchte, and then that crown goes and sits in its place. In other words, yeah, he himself doesn't know where to put it, but it itself goes to the appropriate place. So that's the Girsay in Enyakiv. The Girsay in the printed Gemara is the Amos Shema Tagov, also Yosef Bereshe, basically the same thing, but shorter. He says a shame of Hashem over this crown, and it goes and sits on Hashem's head. Either way, in other words, the point is that since obviously Hashem doesn't have a head as we would understand it, what it means is, in other words, there has to be some kind of praise that is appropriate to Hashem, but the Malachim don't even know. They don't even understand, as high, as great as they are, they themselves don't understand what Atzmus Samachus is. But it means, in other words, that this Malach Sandal puts together the praises of the Tzaddikim, the Tefillahs of the Jewish people in such a way that Hashem makes it appropriate for himself and causes it to go where it's supposed to and accomplish what it's supposed to be looking. So he doesn't go and place it, but Hashem causes it to be placed where it's supposed to go. This is what we mean when we say in Davin, when we say Kesu Yitnu Lacha, means that we give Hashem a crown in the sense, as the Gemara is saying over here, we create the raw materials for the crown out of our tefillahs. This Malach Sandal puts it together, and then it's given to Hashem because Hashem himself arranges that it goes where it's supposed to go and accomplishes what it's supposed to in the Olam HaSelyon. Yom Yom Mashiach Ge'ola, Zayin Elul. The Medrash gives the Zoyar actually gives a mushal of a chosen who's coming to who's looking for his kala, and he finally finds her in a suite of tanners, which is a suite of tanners. A bursiki, yeah, which is a place full of tanneries, which is very smelly throughout shops. You always have the example of a bad smell is a tanner. So we Jewish people doing golos are like that. Hala that's in the shuka de bursiki in this foul smelling place. But the chosin Hashem loves the kala so much that he himself personally goes there and doesn't worry about that bad smell. And in fact, to him it feels like a suite full of spice petals. So all of this is how it is during the time of golos. But now already is the time for it to be the end of golos. We have to be ready for the gola asida. That now, obviously, we can't very well go to the chuppah with the same levushim that we were wearing in that shuka deburski. So in other words, we ourselves have to not just depend on that Hashem is willing to overlook the smell, but we have to put ourselves into a different kind of levushim to be ready for our marriage with Hashem. Miyad mamish. Continuing with halachas of Shabbos. You're walking, for example, where it's muddy or something like that. So now, are you allowed to hitch up your clothes a little bit so they don't get dirty? So you're allowed to a little bit. So the Altadeva adds the detail that what you could also do is you could sort of wrap yourself in them and make sure that you're not sticking your hands out of them. In other words, that you're wearing them in such a way that you're wearing them as actual clothing still. But to lift them up all the way, where you're not wearing them as clothing, where you're just carrying the hems of them, that would be awesome. Another din. You're allowed to, on Shabbos, go out with two of the same kind of clothing, one top of the other, one on top of the other, even if you're not using it for yourself. Let's say, for example, you find somebody, doesn't have a shirt, and you want to bring them one, so you're going to wear two shirts, one on top of the other. But only if it's the kind of thing where on weekdays, sometimes you might do that. So, for example, you might have, let's say you might wear two pairs of socks where it's cold, for example. But if you never wear two kinds of things like that, then you have a problem. The second one would be carrying on Shabbos. Same thing would apply to other items of clothing. Two pairs of tzitzis, for example. So people don't usually wear two pairs of tzitzis unless you're Chaim Pinchas Scheinberg, or Shalom, who used to wear many pairs. But, so the pashtus, wearing two pairs of tzitzis, one over the other, taka might be an example of this where it would be a problem. Another common example is as far as Shabbos key belts, that, if you're wearing pants that have a waistband, or let alone if you're wearing a belt with them, and you're going to wear the Shabbos key belt over your shirt as well, then you have a problem, because then you have two belts that are basically serving the same purpose, which is why you wear the Shabbos key belt under your shirt to hold your tzitzis in place, perhaps since the Alter Rebbe holds anyway that the shear of tzitzis, the minimum amah that tzitzis require, has to be uncreased. So you need something anyway. You need anyway a bendel to hold it in place, otherwise it'll get creased up. So then each belt or each waistband is actually serving a different function, and therefore you're fine. Okay.